The people were cheering and were happy, but that doesn't mean that they were welcoming the Americans.
These politicians care more about their bombs than our babies.
When I think of the School of the Americas, the image that comes to my mind is an enormous torture chamber. And I tremble at that thought.
Sad. It's very, very sad. And I have to tell you, watching that shock and awe, I don't know if the shock and awe was supposed to be for the people of Baghdad or for the people watching the TV.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Thursday, April 10th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Four U.S. Marines were seriously wounded last night when an apparent suicide attacker detonated explosives at a U.S. checkpoint in northern Baghdad. The suicide attack occurred near Saddam City, a sprawling, poor neighborhood that is home to a large Shiite population. President Bush, launching a sweeping media campaign in war-torn Iraq, said in a televised address today, "Your nation will soon be free." British ally Tony Blair assured Iraqis that coalition soldiers are, quote, "friends and liberators, not your conquerors," unquote. The remarks were being beamed throughout Iraq from a U.S. C-130 Hercules aircraft. Using air and ground-based transmitting facilities, the U.S. will broadcast 5 hours of programming 5 days a week on the same channels on which Iraqis have received state television programs. Emboldened by the U.S. military's apparent quick rout of Iraqi forces, conservative hawks in America are setting their sights on regime change, so-called regime change, in Iran and Syria. Quote, "It's time to bring down the other terror masters," unquote, said Michael Leadon of the American Enterprise Institute 2 days before U.S. troops swept into the heart of Baghdad in a piece entitled "Syria and Iran Must Get Their Turn," unquote. In Baghdad, some Iraqis are celebrating the fall of Saddam Hussein, helping U.S. Marines topple his statue, burn his pictures, and cheering in the streets. But yesterday, applauding onlookers were silenced when a Marine covered the face of Saddam Hussein's statue with an American flag. And just a few miles away, the revelry in central Baghdad was replaced by machine gun fire. Deepa Fernandez of Free Speech Radio News spoke with Nyla Razouk, a reporter with Agence France-Presse, who was in Baghdad.
The people were cheering and were happy, and a lot of them were running on the streets. But even though they were taking down the pictures of the president Saddam Hussein, who had ruled the country for 24 years of an iron fist rule, but that doesn't mean that they were welcoming the Americans. They were for sure welcoming the Americans in taking down the president, but in the long run, I don't think that the Iraqi people would like the Americans to stay. They were appreciative that some foreign power was interfering to help bring down the president, maybe. But having an American force stay in Baghdad, that's for sure, they will not be happy about it.
Is your sense then that the war is over if the American troops are in Baghdad and people are taking down, like you say, statues of Saddam Hussein and pictures of Saddam Hussein?
Well, until now, they haven't declared the war over. And frankly speaking, the Iraqi people are still wondering where their president went, where his ministers went, where his aides are, and where the Iraqi army is, where the mighty Republican guards they've been told about are. Because if it took maybe 3 weeks to take down the authorities in the southern cities of Basra and Umm Qasr and other places, it took just 2 days for Baghdad to surrender and fall. So the Iraqis are more puzzled by what's going to happen next than in if the war is over. They want to know who's governing them, because already today, looting started in Baghdad. A lot of people were bringing into state buildings, ministries, headquarters of the previous ruling Ba'ath parties.
We've heard from the Red Cross that they, in fact, are leaving the country because they've described the situation as too chaotic, as unlawful. What's the humanitarian situation? It was a city and indeed a country that's been attacked by the United States and the United Kingdom. What's the humanitarian situation looking like today?
Well, the humanitarian situation is in a bad shape because throughout this war, there were tons and tons of bombs and shells that were fired, millions of ammunition that were fired. So, as one would expect, there are a lot of casualties among civilians that were taken to hospitals. A lot of hospitals are in short of medical staff and equipment and medicine, the American missiles have hit communication centers that are preventing people from having telephones, which is a necessity in any kind of life. They've hit water plants, so people have water cuts. They've hit electricity plants, so people are without electricity. So the situation is not very good in terms of a humanitarian. And if humanitarian aid does not get to Iraq and Baghdad itself anytime soon, it's going to be a big problem.
That was Nayla Razouk of Agence France-Presse speaking with Deepa Fernandez of Free Speech Radio News. A crowd rushed and hacked to death two Shiite Muslim clerics, one a Saddam Hussein loyalist, the other a returning exile who had urged support for U.S. troops during a meeting meant to forge reconciliation at one of Shiite Islam's holiest shrines, witnesses said. An unknown number of people were injured in the melee at the shrine of Imam Ali, one of the holiest sites of Shiite Islam practiced by the majority of Iraqis.
No! Saddam! No, Saddam! Cut off Saddam! Thank you! Thank you, Mr. Bush!
The footage of euphoric Iraqis dancing in the streets and stomping on the face of the Saddam Hussein statue was viewed circumspectly by some Iraqis now living in the U.S. Founder of Iraqi Americans for Peaceful Alternatives, Andy Shalal, says, quote, people are happy not just because Saddam is out, but also because they anticipate the end of 12 years of economic sanctions and the bombings. When I was a kid in Iraq, says Shalal, we had coups and I would go out and jump in the street because it was the coolest thing. It's like D.C. when the Redskins win the Super Bowl. The problem is what comes after that. He spoke with Peace Watch earlier today.
It's obviously mixed feelings, I think, for most Iraqis and Iraqi Americans as well. I think the toppling of the statue belies what's behind the scenes and the looting and the chaos and the anarchy that's about to break out. I don't think there's enough commentary being made about that. This is a very isolated incident of people that are celebrating not necessarily just the toppling of Saddam Hussein's regime, but also the fact that the sanctions that they've been under for 12 years have been brutally, brutally hurting them. Here is a pretty wealthy country that has been impoverished by years of sanctions and brutality of Saddam Hussein, and they're just seeing this as the light maybe at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
But this is soon to dissipate and be replaced with anarchy and chaos.
It is, however, hard to ignore those pictures on the networks where you see so many Iraqis coming out and just jubilant and euphoric in many instances. And there are some shots where the Iraqis are defacing, stomping, or hitting Saddam's statue's face with the bottom of their shoe, which I'm told is the ultimate insult. And so it just speaks volumes, those pictures.
Well, yes, it does. I think photo ops are obviously what this war has been about, and this is certainly a photo op that is not to be missed. I do believe that it has sort of covered up the whole reason why we went in there to begin with, which is weapons of mass destruction. Everybody has been speaking about how successful this campaign has been. And then we turned around and see what happened to Al-Houthi today in Najaf, which is the most holy city for the Shiites. And the fact that he has been assassinated and brutally killed by his own people is shocking, to say the least. And I think it's foreboding and it shows of what kind of anarchy and chaos Iraq is about to face in the years to come when you do such a major shock and awe to the whole system, not just to Baghdad.
Of course, that town in Nejeb, I would imagine, now will be occupied by U.S. troops that will be forced to sort of occupy or mix in with the Shia community, which I would imagine, and you can fill us in on this, would be very skeptical about having Westerners as a part of their community in any fashion.
Well, I saw some of the insensitivity that's sort of been taking place. There was an interview that was done with a man from Nejef shortly after some of the troops entered. And he says, yes, now that we have the American troops, we're going to have whiskey and sexy now. Mm-hmm. And I remember that. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, that sort of flies in the face of Islam, flies in the face of decency. And I don't think we realize that comments like that can come back to haunt us years from now.
I want to go back to what you were saying earlier about this war being a photo op. While we saw the pictures of the Iraqis, just jubilant in central Baghdad as the 20-foot statue of Saddam Hussein was pulled down by the Marines that were there with their tank, before the statue actually toppled, one of the Marines draped an American flag over the head and face of the statue of Saddam Hussein. And that photo op, that picture, freeze frame, spoke volumes as well. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I think it shows some of the confusion of some of the Marines to not know why exactly are we there. It's like almost they have this question mark on their mind. You saw it at the beginning when they entered Umm Qasr, right at the beginning when the Marine got up on top and put the American flag, and then he was asked to lower it and put up the Iraqi flag back again. And now they're taking up the old Iraqi flag and putting the old Iraqi flag and so on. So there's a lot of confusion, and we're trying to get a message out there to the world, I guess, at some level to say we're doing the right thing. And I'm sure these young men and women feel that they are doing the right thing, but I think they're getting so many mixed messages. And the fact that they went in there supposedly to find weapons of mass destruction, which they have not found, that smoking gun that they were looking for, we enter the country with lots of smoking guns to only not find the smoking gun we were looking for, seems, odd. I don't know. And then I talked to some of the main media here and say, what do you think of the successful campaign of what we did? And I said, I thought we went in for Resolution 1441, which said nothing about liberation or ousting the regime. It talks specifically about weapons of mass destruction. That's been forgotten. The fact that international law and all international norms are being flaunted, are being sort of being overlaid with this photo op of a statue being torn down.
Mm. Of course, the Bush administration did say all along that their mission was in part regime change and that they were going to, quote unquote, liberate the Iraqi people. But I want to ask you, you are an Iraqi American, Andy Shalal. Have you spoken with any of your family members there in Iraq? Or do you have family members there?
Yeah. We have about 50 or so family members still in Baghdad. Able to speak to them. The last time was, I think, March 26th, was when the communication lines were cut. But I was watching, I remember either that day or the day before, I was watching Al Jazeera, and I was sitting at my parents' house, who live here in Northern Virginia, and we're watching, and I all of a sudden this flash came on the television where my old neighborhood, where I grew up when I was 11 years old, was bombed, and I was really saddened to see that. So, a lot of the bombs were going about indiscriminately. We have dropped 20,000 bombs, and according to best estimates, they're about 85% accurate, which makes about 3,000 bombs have missed their targets, some of them landing in different countries, for that matter.
One Arab analyst we spoke with suggested that since the Iraqis have lived under the dictatorships for so many years, they've lived in constant fear and would likely cheer and applaud and dance in the streets, regardless of whatever power is in control, whether it be Saddam Hussein, Tommy Franks, or whoever. Is that a fair assessment?
I would absolutely say so. In fact, my mother was saying that. I bet you if Saddam Hussein was to show up tomorrow, you'd have the same crowd cheering him back on. You know, the Iraqi people are very flexible. They've learned to be in order for them to survive. So they're seeing the American troops that are being their next sort of, captor, so to speak. And they're trying to put the best face forward in order to, curry the most amount of favor with them. So, I think the Iraqi people are tired. They're really tired. It's been too many years of a brutal dictatorship, coupled with horrible sanctions, that have sort of brought them to this level. But they're resourceful. They're a very educated, well-versed people, and I think they'll be able to, weather this just like they've done everything else.
Did you grow up in Baghdad at all, Andy Shalal?
Well, my memories of Baghdad are rather dim. We moved here to this country when I was 11 years old in 1966. So I do remember, a fair amount of what was going on there, but not a whole lot. I do remember, however, the ruins that are around Baghdad and the fact that Baghdad and Iraq was the cradle of civilization. And I couldn't help but, while watching those cluster bombs being dropped, thinking they're not only falling on innocent civilians, but also ruining, ancient artifacts, ancient cities. And that's kind of a sad thing, too. So, yeah.
Any of the scenes that you may have observed on the TV set recall any childhood memories for you?
It's been a great sort of learning experience for our family, because we're bringing out old maps of Baghdad and looking at where we lived and where the bombs are dropping and so on. It's sad. It's very, very sad. And I have to tell you, watching that shock and awe, I don't know if the shock and awe was supposed to be for the people of Baghdad or for the people watching the TV, but I was shocked. It was a very emotional moment for me, I have to say.
Andy Shalal, founder of the Iraqi Americans for Peaceful Alternatives. Yesterday, journalists walked off the job in protest, and a few politicians demanded answers over the deaths of three journalists in Baghdad. From Egypt to Mexico City, media officials vented their anger after U.S. forces killed journalists from Reuters News Service, Al Jazeera TV, and a Spanish news network. Al Jazeera went so far as to accuse the U.S. of deliberately targeting their facilities to silence a powerful voice in the Arab world. Ironically, Al Jazeera had just received an award for its uncensored coverage of the Gulf War on March 29th. This contrasts with U.S. complaints of Al Jazeera being a, quote, tool of the Saddam Hussein regime, unquote, and therefore a legitimate target. Peace Watch spoke with senior producer for Al Jazeera, Hassan Ibrahim, yesterday regarding the media coverage of the invasion of Iraq. We go now to part two of that interview.
American media has to do a better job in basically approaching each side of the problem more objectively, because as we see it up to now, the track record of the American media in the Middle East is very, very, very one-sided.
Okay.
Unfortunately. It's as if watching two different wars. What I noticed that the American media is trying to basically portray this as a clean, clear-cut war, and we're showing the other side of it. So I believe we're covering all the aspects we can think of. I mean, we have no red lines, definitely. I mean, I don't have to adhere to the Arab nationalist cause or the American national interest or whatever. The motto, we believe, is report what you see. And if what I see is ugly, then tough. That it is ugly, and I'm going to show it. If it doesn't appease the Iraqis, doesn't appease Mr. Saddam Hussein, then so be it. If it doesn't appease Mr. Bush, so be it. But unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect world. Mm. I mean, what I see before my eyes is just media men trying their best to gag themselves, and that disturbs me.
Mm. Is Al Jazeera reporting that Saddam Hussein has been killed at this point?
We don't know that. What I think has happened is that he was struck. His one of his hideouts was located due to, I think, on-the-ground intelligence. And I think he probably fled to Tikrit, his hometown, or is somewhere around Iraq. But we don't really have any confirmation of his state. I mean, whether he's alive or dead, I don't know. But apparently, Tikrit is still fighting. The CENTCOM here is reporting that there is intense fighting around Tikrit, and the intense bombing is still going on. There is fighting near Mosul. There is fighting in certain pockets of resistance around Baghdad. So this tells at least that the Iraqi leadership is still there somewhere. It's just they don't have a coherent government. One-sided reporting.
So I want to be clear, Hassan Ibrahim, about what you said about these crowds of cheering Iraqis. You're saying basically that they are staged, or are you just you? Where do you think they come from?
I don't know. I don't know. That's the best answer, because I've seen stuff like that in the Arab world before, where things like that were staged. I am sure that there are people who were oppressed by the Iraqi regime who will be more than happy to see the back of this regime. But let me tell you one thing. It's an old British tactic that was used in the Middle East over many years. Bring out the masses. Let them make life so difficult for the middle class and the upper middle class, so people will accept any kind of government that will be imposed on them, whether it be the Iraqi opposition or an American general. Just life in Baghdad over the coming few days, weeks, I expect, will be so difficult to bear that people will accept anything, any semblance of law and order. And as far as these matters are concerned, I'm not saying there aren't people who are happy to see the back of Saddam Hussein. Definitely. I will say to you, plenty of people will be happy that they saw the back of the Iraqi regime. But have they really seen the back of the regime? That I don't know. Have they? Are these people representative of the Iraqi people? I don't know. So I'm just, my best answer is I don't know.
Final question. A restaurant was bombed yesterday by U.S. missiles. It was said that a credible source had actually informed them that Saddam Hussein and perhaps his sons were dining in that restaurant.
Do you really believe that? I mean, in a state of war where Baghdad is threatened by bombing, the most sophisticated army in the planet, surveillance equipment, Saddam Hussein with his sons would go and dine in a restaurant? I mean, is that logical?
You're asking me to respond to that, or is that a theoretical? Is that a theoretical question?
I mean, do you believe it's logical that anyone would believe that?
You're putting me on the spot now, Hassan.
I'm sorry.
I have to remain objective and ask the questions.
I am being objective. I'm not being subjective. It beguiles the mind. I cannot understand how would anyone believe that a person on the loose, being pursued by the most sophisticated equipment and equipped intelligence agencies in the world, would actually go and dine publicly in a restaurant.
Are you familiar with that residential area?
I know Baghdad like I know the face of my son.
So you know that restaurant?
Yes, I do.
And
I
that
do.
Area?
I mean, it's wide open in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and Saddam would be out of his mind if he goes there. And one thing I know about Saddam is a dictator, but he's not crazy. He cares so much for his safety. I mean, the man is so, I mean, eluded so many assassination attempts by being ultra cautious.
Do you think he'll leave, or do you think he is still there in Baghdad somewhere at this time?
My best guess, and here I'm just stabbing the dark. I would say since that bombing 2 nights ago, I believe probably his lieutenants, you know, and members of his clan asking go to Tikrit for a final standoff. You know, he will die in Tikrit. He will die standing in Tikrit, because then at least you'll find some people in Iraq and other parts of the Arab world who would remember him as a person who fought to the last bullet. Because if he dies that night, again, people will remember that, well, he's the person who stood up to America and Britain for so many days. But if he tries to leave the country and basically live a life on the run, he would lose respect even from his closest allies. And he has very few these days.
People have said he's a coward and that he puts his own people as human shields and tries to position them around.
That's an expletive that I just don't know how to respond to. That's like going into a high school yard and saying you're brave and I'm coward. I mean, this human shield theory, I don't know why wasn't it talked about when the Israeli Supreme Court was asked the Israeli army not to do it, and yet I don't see it reported in the American media when the Palestinians were used as human shields by the Israeli army in the raids of Ramallah and Gaza and blah, 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 blah. So I don't know about being cowardly. I think he's a man who lived by the sword. And as they say, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, you know.
Senior producer for Al Jazeera TV network Hassan Ibrahim, a personal friend of Tariq Ayub of Al Jazeera, who was killed when their offices in Baghdad were bombed by U.S. forces. He spoke with us from the streets of Doha, Qatar. The Turkish province of Urfa has been accidentally bombed three times with cruise missiles since the war on Iraq began. But as Aaron Glantz reports from Urfa, residents there are more worried about the war's effect on their collapsing economy than by errant bombs.
Hundreds of fish swim in a sacred pond in Urfa, the city of prophets. The biblical Abraham was born here, and it was here that he shattered the idols of King Nimrod with his father's hammer, beginning the Judeo-Christian Islamic tradition. According to scripture, when Abraham broke King Nimrod's idols, the king threw him into a burning fire. But God saved Abraham, turning the fire into water and the wood into fishes. For centuries, pilgrims and tourists have come to this site to pay tribute to the biblical patriarch. But with war just a few miles away in Iraq, all the big Western tourist agencies have canceled their trips. 13-year-old Farouk has worked as a tour guide since he was 10.
Since the war began, less tourists have begun to come. Last year at this time, when the weather was getting warm, three or four buses would come every day. But now there are maybe three or four tourists a day. The shops have been affected very badly. They used to be selling $40 or $50 a day, but now they usually sell nothing.
And it's not just the tourist sector that's depressed here in Urfa. Almost every business here is suffering as people stay home and hoard their money in case the war spreads across the border to Turkey. Firat builds industrial kitchens for cities and restaurants. His business has dropped by 80% since the war started. When I entered his store, he and his brother were discussing whether they would have to close their business to pay for their mounting debts.
We haven't gotten any new work for the last 3 months. We're just living off our old contracts. We've had to borrow money from our fathers. We don't know how to pay off our debts.
As the damaged war economy creeps throughout the area, it begins to affect the delivery of health services.
Bu psikolojik korku nedeniyle yerli bildiğim birçok Urfalı
Ahmet Inan is one of Urfa's leading physicians. He says 20% of his patients have canceled their appointments since the start of the war. And he says that while many of Urfa's residents are canceling their scheduled medical procedures, equal numbers are coming with imagined ailments they say are caused by the bombing of Iraq. He says the number of psychological referrals is way up since the start of the war, and he says he hopes it ends soon for the health of the people of Urfa.
Halkı ve bölge halkını özellikle rahatsız etmektedir.
Back at the sacred pond of Abraham, 13-year-old Farouk has a message for George Bush. It's one you can hear from almost anyone, anywhere in Turkey.
George Bush must stop the war. The children mustn't die. He must stop the war. Many children die without even seeing the world. We don't want the war. Stop the war.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Aaron Glantz with Özlem Tsiriildis in Urfa, southeastern Turkey.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.